Welcome to Carce and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carce and Alexander Danilov.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome back to the Steve Carce and the Kid show. I am the Kid. He is Steve Carce. Been a few weeks since we were able to do the show. We're so happy and excited to be back. Steve, say hello to the folks.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Glad to be back. It has been a long time, but we're ready for a fun-filled and enjoying show.
Yeah, it seems like even not doing the show, you know, back-to-back days or, you know, 7 days in a row, it feels like you miss a lot. So we'll do our best to cover everything. Off with the loss of two legends in sports history, and humanitarian to a large degree as well. We have Muhammad Ali, who passed away a couple weeks back, and Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, who passed away days ago. And it's been rough for sports fans, especially ones that that are more historians and bigger fans of the sport that go way back, that enjoy how it was back then just as much as they do now, just because the nature of the way the game was, and boxing, obviously, the way it was back then, when everyone said there was a true heavyweights back then. Of course, you have big boys fighting now, too, but everyone always seems to go back and have nostalgia of the past, and Muhammad Ali referred to it as the greatest, not just boxing, in all of sports, passing away, and then Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, passing away at the age of 88, I believe, or 89. So two legends of the sport. Steve, any words to say?
Yeah, you know, that's it's one of those things where, you know, I think, obviously, I have grown up with knowing both of them and understanding what they have done for, you know, for their sports. I mean, obviously, Muhammad Ali, you know, one of or the greatest boxer of all time, and Gordie Howe, you know, Wayne Gretzky has said, you know, he was the greatest hockey player that he has ever seen. So, you know, coming from Wayne Gretzky, that's, you know, that's something special. But, you know, both those guys will be missed. And, you know, they've done a lot for their sport, and we really appreciate that. And both of them, you know, have just done so much.
Mm-hmm. And things. It's a great equalizer in many respects of having somewhat of a level playing field. Of course, if you know, steroids excluded that, but it's meant so much to so many people. Of course, yourself, myself, we learned about life there. We learned the hard knocks out there. We heard stories from people out there in between, you know, if we're playing in between pitches, if we're playing baseball or basketball, in between, inbounds and passing and things like that. It means so much to so many people, and it's even brought politicians together, Steve, which is a rare feat. So the U.S. Senate passing a resolution honoring Gordie Howe and his memory and his legacy in Hockey Town, sending that over to the family of Gordie Howe, who did die last Friday at the age of 88. Just a little bit of stats here. Gordie Howe played, it's literally felt like forever, started at age 18 with the Detroit Red Wings in the NHL. Didn't seem like he was going to be that big of a star at that point. I mean, again, he was 18, but he had 7 goals, 22 total points and 58 games played, and then give him a couple of years, develops almost like that Bryce Harper type girl. Give him a time to develop. Age 21, exploded with 35 goals, 33 assists in 70 games en route, and they only they play fewer games back then as well. It's not the 82 game season we know today. But looking at how he played and playing professionally up to the age of 51 for Hartford, now this is amazing, Steve. He started in 1946-47. A year after World War II ended, 1979, 1980, and beginning the Reagan era. So you're talking about FDR Truman to Ronald Reagan. That's a huge swath of time. Hit that last professional season with Hartford, played 80 games, scoring 15 goals, 26 assists, 41 total points that season. It's amazing. He was 51 years old in his final season. Just an amazing talent, obviously a true love for the game. His son, also a Hall of Famer, Mark Howe, a great family, great sports family, of course. And, both Muhammad Ali and Gordie Howe will be sorely missed what they've done, in their respective sports. And, of course, they're able to do it. So the legacy, of course, remembered on this show, on the Steve Carsey and the Kids show, and we thank them for their contributions on, you know, in sport and out of sport. So with that, we'll start off with our one thing. For me, it's going to be Ichiro Suzuki. And I know everyone's talking about, oh, he's got the most professional hits ever now, passing Pete Rose. Of course, Pete Rose doesn't like that slight, and why would you blame him? How could you blame him, saying he has the most hits of any professional? I don't want to get into that debate as much unless you want to speak on the sieve of professional hits. It's a different world, different players. When players don't make it here, typically they go to Japan and they either do well or they still obscure. But it's rare that people don't do well in Japan and come here and dominate. But Ichiro is one of those rare players that were able to do it in both, dominate in both. Him, in his career, I think he's about 21 hits away now from 3,000 hits in Major League Baseball. He came over when he was, what, 28 years old, an impressive streak of 200 consecutive hit seasons, breaking George Sisto's record of 257, ending with 262 that year. Just a truly amazing player and a guy who I wish we were able to see in the Home Run Derby, because from everything that I heard from them, he could tank the ball with the best of them in batting practice, but that wasn't his game. You got to give him credit. Excuse me. You got to give him credit for sticking to his game and sticking to what works best for him, which is that slash, slap, hit, and running as he's swinging the bat. And it's worked so well for him. Instant Hall of Famer, Ichiro Suzuki, close to 3,000 career hits in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, what an incredible feat. You know, like you said, I won't touch on that. But for him to do what he has done in Major League Baseball from the age of 28 on, yeah, is extremely impressive. So, you know, we will see Ichiro get to 3,000 hits here in a relatively short time. And
he's doing
and
great this
been,
year, by the way. He's hitting 354 this year. It's been incredible.
Yeah, he's been. You know, nobody expected him to do that well, and you know he's one of those guys who, you know, is getting older and still, you know, is in good shape and is impressive in what he does. So that's great first thing. My first thing, actually, I'm going to stick on players, is Clayton Kershaw. You know, I'm just going to throw it out there and explain how hard it is to do what he's doing. You know, through his last start, he has 133 strikeouts and 7 walks. To be able to do that over the length of the season is incredibly tough. To command the ball every start and to, you know, and to minimize the number of walks and to strike out that many people just shows you how dominating of a stuff he has. Because this isn't a guy who has just come onto the scene and guys don't know what he throws. It doesn't know how his ball moves or you know, doesn't know how he's going to attack them from start to start. This guy's been around a while. Obviously, he's got a couple Cy Youngs. He has, you know, incredible feel for the strike zone, incredible feel for his pitches from outing to outing, and the consistency that this guy shows is truly amazing. And I just want everybody out there to understand it is not easy to be able to strike out over 100 guys, 133, and only walk 7 and be out of the strike zone that much. Because it's not like the umpires are giving strikes to him like they used to give to Glavin and Maddox and Smoltz and the Big Three and some of the older, you know, generational guys where the strike zone was a little bit bigger because of the name. That is not the case anymore. We have Questak and you know, Trackman and a whole bunch of these other things that show where these pitches are, and this guy is unbelievably great at just commanding the strike zone and throwing strikes. So kudos to you, Clayton Kershaw, for continuing the consistency and being the best pitcher, in my opinion, in Major League Baseball at this point.
Yeah, certainly the most dominant over time. Let's add some numbers to it. So this season, 10-1 on the season, he's tied for second in wins across Major League Baseball. Jake Arrieta notching his 11th yesterday, and Chris Sale also at 11 there. But Clayton Kershaw, 10-1 on the season, 1.58 ERA in 14 starts, 108 innings, 133 Ks, 0.6 6 WHIP. Now, for people that think that it's just a first half story, it's not just a first half story. So let's look at his stats. The last time across the whole season that his ERA, his WHIP finished over 1 was back in 2012, Steve, and it was a 1.02. So it's not like it was that far above his lifetime WHIP 101. We all know how much I love that stat. I think it tells a lot of the story. You're letting guys on base, you're gonna have a very high WHIP. Whether you're walking them or hits, doesn't matter. You have a high WHIP, chances are you can have an ERA, and it tells the rest of the story from there. But if you have a high WHIP and a low ERA, it tells the story that you're getting guys out. You're getting into trouble, but you're able to get guys out, and you feel good under pressure. Maybe you'd be better in the relief position coming in late. But this year, 7 walks so far. A couple years ago, across 191 innings, had only 31 walks. Last year, 232 innings, 42 walks. The guy does not strike people does not walk a lot of guys, like you said. Only 64 hits given up so far. 6 home runs hit against him. Just an incredible story for him. Just one more stat on top of that. Actually, maybe 2 more. He has 3 complete games and 3 shutouts already this year. How many did he have last year? 3 shutouts across the whole season. 4 complete games, so well on route to getting closer to that 6 complete game number he had a couple seasons ago when he won 21 games, which was the second time he won 21. Last stat on Clayton Kershaw before I move forward, Steve. What's his average fastball speed this year? Just above 93 baseballs, all of baseball for the 4 seamers, right around 92-80. So a little bit above the average, but you got to remember there's a lot of guys that can't throw hard, but he's not throwing 97-98 throughout the whole game. He's throwing hard enough. He's throwing harder than the average, but he's not blowing guys away that way, which tells you that he's evolved greatly as a pitcher as well.
Yeah, he's just, like I said, he's just been amazing to watch. It's truly impressive. And people who just don't know because it's the West Coast, you might want to watch this guy. This guy is a, once in a generation type of pitcher that you're seeing. You're seeing, another Tom Seaver, another Roger Clemens, another Sandy Koufax. You're seeing those type of guys in Clayton Kershaw and what he's able to accomplish right now up to this point in his career.
I had some of my speakers. Sorry about that. So Clayton Kershaw, we talked about him and how amazing it is. It's just one of those players that, like you said, Steve, generational. And Michael Downs, one of the top 5, top 10 greatest pitchers of all time, might be the last pitcher to get the 300 wins. So we'll talk about that more as his career progresses, obviously, but truly impressive story. What I was saying before I realized I got cut off was David Ortiz tying Teddy Ballgame and William McCovey and Frank Thomas last night, 521 career homers. An impressive career and impressive what he said is his final season at batting 344 this year, Steve. Of course, the emotional tug is him tying Ted Williams, the Red Sox great. David Ortiz, they love him. He can do no wrong, it seems like, in Boston, just like Tom Brady out in with the New England Patriots. This is a guy that can do no wrong. It seems like every time he's counted out, he continues to do things like this. Just an amazing talent that the Red Sox have brought in years ago. I know a lot of people have a lot to say about him. Potential ties to steroids and things like that, but that's a whole different avenue. And it looks like we just lost Steve as well, so I'm calling Steve back in now. And apologize for the tech issues again, folks.
Steve-o. Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
So it looks like I had some tech issues on my side too. I actually have been in contact with the company that runs our platform, just airing my frustration with them for the issues we've been having. I apologize for that. Of course, we don't control that. If Steve and I were more technical, more engineers, we probably also wouldn't be talking baseball, but we'd be able to build our own platform, but that's an ideal world. So, Steve, I was just talking about obviously closing our conversation on Clayton Kershaw and how he might end up becoming the last 300-game winner, I believe maybe for a while until the game changes. But also David Ortiz hitting his 521 home run last night, tying Ted Williams. William McCovey and Frank Thomas. And of course, the Red Sox fans, they care more about the Ted Williams. And the fact that David Ortiz is probably having his best season since his days with Manny Ramirez, batting 344, I just said? 344, in what's to be his last season in the majors.
Yeah, he's been incredible, too. I mean, you know, you look what this guy's done over his career. A few years back, and people were saying he was done, and this was not, the David Ortiz that they're used to. But, he said it was his last season. He's come out, and, you know, maybe he wish he hasn't said that, because he's been nothing but on the top of his game. He's shown the power. He's driving in guys. You know, Boston's having a pretty good year, and he's leading that club like he has in the past, 7, 8, 9 years.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, he's not striking out that much. He has 31 walks this year, which doesn't seem like a lot, but he's not a guy who walks 100 plus a season. He's done that a few times in his career. That was the 05, 06, 07 years with the Red Sox, but only has 38 strikeouts this year. And this is a guy that typically is not a big strikeout guy, but he has struck out over 130, 140 times. Not quite the Adam Dunn, but lifetime 286 career batting average. This year, again, batting 344. Even has a stolen base this year, Steve. So either that, he could use that, it's my last year, I'm done type of thing, to get more, to possibly get a big one-year contract just to stay on for historic purposes. But he is 40 years old. He's been in the game for so long. And just one stat on that, Major League Baseball has this these StatCast averages on their site. And his average launch speed is 94.76. That's how it's coming off the bat. The Major League average is 89.11. Average distance that he's hitting is 248.14. Major League Baseball, Steve, 205.74. So this guy crushing the ball when he hits it, even when he pops up, when he just hits it lightly, it's going far. This guy's having the time of his life right now playing. Doesn't seem to have a lot of pressure on him. Doesn't seem to feel it. There's no more talk about him being done. He says he's done after this year, but it's on his accord. And notching now that home run, giving him 1,700 career RBIs. He has almost 1,400 career runs and almost 2,400 career hits. Is going to be a big conversation on whether he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, all those allegations and things like that. By the way, also has over 600 career doubles. So if you look at stats and nothing else, he has one of the best careers in Major League history, and he got a very slow start. Really, the first three seasons of his career was from 97 to 99, only 23 home runs. Only 10 home runs during those first three seasons. So the guy got started a little bit later than he had wanted to, but once he got going, couldn't stop him. David Ortiz having a great season, of course, a great career there. Some more things to discuss. We're seeing a lot of players had three runs. We saw it again last night. Mike Saunders. We saw Victor Martinez do it earlier in the week. We saw Chris Davis do it back May 17th. Lorenzo Cain, Mookie Betts as well. Now, these are guys who are, some of these guys are known for their power. Chris Davis, Victor Martinez had home runs over his time. But they're not known, Lorenzo Cain, they're not known to be power hitters or guys that would hit multiple home run games in the same game, maybe even in back-to-back games, because they're just not that kind of player. But it's really impressive to see. I don't know what to make of the fact that we're seeing so many guys having a multi-home run game so far this season. But it is good for the game to see guys that don't do it that often have these kinds of career games, because it doesn't, it doesn't speak to, it doesn't bring the flashbacks of steroids and saying, this guy's having three home runs, once or twice a month. It's not happening that way. It just got individual guys having really great career nights.
Yeah, it has. I think there's a few different reasons to that, and this is my opinion, is that, the bats that they're making today, they're much harder. The wood that they're using, it's maple, and maple is one of the hardest woods you can get. They break very easy, but if you hit the ball on the barrel, which these guys do, it definitely translates into the ball going a little bit further. And then the other thing is, the back end of the rotations, the 3, 4, and 5 guys, in Major League Baseball right now, in my opinion, are watered down on most teams. The stuff is you know, not as good, and hitters are taking advantage of it. And I think that's why we see, you know, these high-scoring games, a lot of these, you know, multi-home run games. If you look at multi-home run games, they're not often number one and twos. They're not often Clayton Kershaw's, Felix Hernandez's. You know, Carlos Carrasco, Corey Kluber, they're off your 3-4 and 5 guys who players feast off of. You know, they're back into the rotation guys who are just logging innings. You know, not that they're not any good, they are good, but they're not at the competitive level as some of these really, you know, upper echelon. Postseason, you don't see those 3-4 and 5 guys nearly as much. The ones and twos, and
It seems like we're losing you again, Steve. Can you hear us, Steve?
Having good games. So, you know, that's just my opinion on why there's so many multi-home run games, you know, during season.
So that's interesting. Obviously, you have a better take on it than especially somebody like me who's more in the casual fan, the diehard fan. But it's stuff like that I might not be looking at, and you obviously know that right off the bat. And it has happened a lot this year, and you're right in the fact that who these guys are hitting these home runs off of. But still impressive nonetheless. I know you're not taking away from that, but it's still pretty cool to see that happen every so often. It's good for the fans to see that. Speaking of guys hitting home runs in big moments, which we haven't talked about yet, but Carlos Santana hitting a nice walk-off shot yesterday, having a very good season there, a guy who has 11 home runs on the season now, on pace to have a really good season. Average not there, but it's a guy who does walk a lot, and is he's stepping up for that team, the Cleveland Indians, hanging on to first place in that division. And I know you talked about we talked about the Indians quite a bit here because your experience with the franchise, and even still now with the Clippers. But the Indians, a team we're going to talk about a little bit more in later on in the show. Tim Lincecum making his Angels debut tonight, so a lot of people thought he would go back to the Giants and have one more chance there, but he is staying in California. He's just going to a different town, and he will be pitching for Angels. Hasn't been an easy road for the former two-time Cy Young Award winner, former star. They call him the Freak. Hopefully he does well there. Steve, what do you take? Any words about his first start with the Angels, first start in the American League?
Yeah, well, we'll see how freaky he gets tonight. I think that, you know, AAA is a good test for him. You know, I think his stuff has definitely diminished over the years. I mean, he has had that hip surgery, his pretty violent delivery. I think he'll compete well tonight. I really do. I think that's something that you're always going to get from him. We'll just see how his stuff translates to major league hitters. You know, I believe that they're facing an A's lineup, which, you know, isn't the strongest in the league, but it'll be a good challenge for Tim, and we'll see how, you know, how the result plays out.
Wishing him success here. Guy who struggled this year, not so much with the bat, although he hasn't had his typical season. Freddie Freeman hitting for the cycle tonight. Mark Otze since, I don't know, it feels like decades ago that happened, and the Braves not much to hang their hats on this year. Freddie Freeman hitting for the cycle the other night. I believe he did that in extra innings. I was watching on MLB tonight on MLB Network. I think he did that in extra innings. Of course, it doesn't mean you take that away from him, but really impressive for him to be able to do that. Not a guy you expect to hit for a triple or even a single. He's more of a, you know, double and home run guy, but he's a terrific player. Has nobody around him this year, unfortunately. They just traded Kelly Johnson again to the New York Mets, and Kelly Johnson responds in kind by hitting a home run in his early days with the Mets again. So Freddie Freeman, not much around him. Of course, not much to hang his hat on this year, but a rare cycle for not just a Braves player, but just anybody in general. Guys having tremendous performances this year, Steve. We got to talk about Mark Trumbo having 20 home runs at this point now, tied for the Major League lead with Nolan Arenado. And Carlos Beltran having a great season as well. I mean, talk about a guy in, this is his last year with the Yankees in that 3-year, $45 million contract. He's hitting .281, 17 homers, 46 RBIs. He's going to be an All-Star this year unless he gets hurt, something happens. He's probably going to have 22 to 23 home runs before the All-Star break, which is awesome for him. He's been more or less healthy, nagging injuries here and there, but he's had a lot of big hits, a lot of big games for a team who fighting to be around .500 this year. Not a very good team overall. And Mark Teixeira going down. He lost Greg Bird in the preseason. Alex Rodriguez, as my father's called him for years, the most expensive windmill in baseball. Carlos Beltran, you got to consider, if you're the New York Yankees, potentially giving him another year because you have a guy like Brett Gardner as well who's just not playing himself. He's lifted his average a little bit. That run he had over the last couple of weeks, now struggling again a bit. Hitting .248, there's not a lot for the Yankees to really be proud of offensively. You have Masahiro Tanaka's only had six decisions this year. He's lost two games on the season, one of them only surrendering one run to the lead in its own. Did win earlier in the week on the 17th against the Twins a couple nights ago, but kind of expected him to do that. But as a team that just can't seem to score runs, if you're the Yankees, Steve, do you give Carlos Beltran another year and just give it to him now, or do you wait for the end of the season to see? If he ends up with a 35-40 homer season, you got to believe somebody's going to go out there and give him another two-year contract because they believe that he can do what Lance Berkman did when everyone thought he was done and the Big Puma went over to the St. Louis Cardinals and helped them win that title.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, both those guys have been having great years, like you said, Trumbo and Beltran. Both are beneficiaries from the ballparks that they play in. So, they still have to hit the ball. With that being said, I just think that the Yankees are probably going to hold off on that, being his age, them knowing the nagging injuries that he had. They only know over the past couple of years, you know, how healthy he is and what he's capable of doing, what kind of treatment he's getting. It's one of those things where, you know, do you or don't you? You kind of caught in between, but most of the time, if you don't, you let him play out the rest of the year. If another team wants to give him a two-year deal and think he's going to do the same thing he did that year, then you might have to let him walk if you have some prospects and some people behind him, and depending what your depth is or, you know, what their plan is about going out and getting a free agent to replace him, because I'm sure they've already thought about that if this is the last year of his deal. I'm just not sure how much money he would want with a one-year extension. If he's looking to get $15 million a year, I just don't think the Yankees are going to be willing to do that.
Yep. Talking about a former Yankee, Robbie Cano, having a great year. Looks like a career year, definitely power-wise. Looking like an MVP this season as well. What does he end up doing this year? Makes history. The most home runs by AL second baseman in history. So, passing and retiring 1950. From 1938 to 1950, Joe Gorin, 247 home runs as a second baseman, AL second baseman, 253 total in his career. Robbie Cano, since 05, since coming up, 248 career home runs now as a second baseman, 258 in his career. Now the top home run hitter for all second baseman AL history. He's had a great career so far. Looks to continue that. He's got many years left on that contract with the Mariners, making them look like they were smarter now, even though I still think that was a ludicrous contract, but it's relevant. And my opinion is irrelevant, but he's been doing a lot for that city right now and getting baseball back and the attention back, grabbing some headlines with everything he's been able to do. But Robbie Cano, great season so far. One more thing on the Mariners. Ken Griffey Jr. says he used to tickle Ichiro before every game, which I think is funny, and some of the antics you see in baseball, which makes it human, but unfortunately they don't bring it out that much. What do you think, Steve? Do you think baseball should be more open with things like that, more of the ritual side of baseball, more of the kiddish side of baseball, to bring more fans in and make it, you know, what Bryce Harper has been saying, is make baseball fun again? I think that's some of the stuff that makes it human that people don't see and know about that I think would be cool to know.
Yeah, probably a lot of people never knew about it. Obviously, that's the first I've ever heard of it. So, you know, what these guys do behind closed doors before the media comes in, is their business. I think, you know, that's something that, was probably one of those things they just had fun with for some reason. maybe he didn't like to get tickled or whatever it was, and Ken Griffey just started messing with him or something. But that's just something that stays inside the clubhouse, and you know, it was done behind closed doors. So I don't see any reason to for anyone to let that out if nobody else saw it.
Okay. So we have the MLB All-Star Game upon us now, less than a month away, Steve. July 12th is the night. So, of course, it seems to be a scandal, so to speak, every single season. Last year we had the Kansas City Royals. This year we have the Chicago Cubs and the whole infield looking like they might be starters in the All-Star Game, which I think is cool to one degree. I think it's crazy to another degree because I don't think Addison Russell deserves to be there over some of the other guys like Trevor Story. Right now, just looking at the National League, because that's where the story is right now, and of course this will change over time, Yadier Molina leading with the most votes in catching position, over 900,000 above Buster Posey. The catching position has been very tough in Major League Baseball. If you're a fantasy baseball guy, the catching position is has been kind of a dead wish. No matter who you pick up, it just seems like it doesn't work out. Guys not playing on a regular basis. When they start playing, they get hurt. It's all this crazy stuff. Wilson Ramos, who's probably the best hitting catcher right now, at least for this season, 600,000 votes, 333,000 votes behind Yadier Molina. So, of course, popularity contest. First base led by Anthony Rizzo. And, Steve, look at these numbers. 1.748 million votes for Anthony Rizzo. Brandon Belt, number two, 584,000 votes. It's amazing. John Jaso, actually number five. In voting there, which I didn't think I'd ever see, way above Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman's not even on there. John Jaso is. Just shows you the power of the fans and being able to vote as many times as you want. Second base, you have Ben Zobris, who has nearly 500,000 more votes than Daniel Murphy, which I think is also crazy. Neil Walker coming in third there, not even close vote-wise, 384,000 votes for Neil Walker. Joe Panik, who's having a down year, close fourth at 374. Chris Davis, well above Nolan Arenado, who's on even a competitive team, somewhat of a competitive team this year, would be considered an MVP candidate. Has 20 home runs in the season, tied for the most in baseball. Chris Bryant, 1.629 million votes, second year in the league. Nolan Arenado, 1.66. Matt Carpenter, very distant third at 424,000. Matt Carpenter deserves to be an All-Star, my belief. David Wright is fifth there, has no business being there because he's barely played this year. When he has played, he's been good, but no reason that he should have 273,000 votes. Shortstop, again, Addison Russell beating out Trevor Story by almost 300,000 votes. Trevor Story, I hope to see him in the All-Star game. It's been great for baseball, great for the Rockies, and them just designating Jose Reyes as well because of how good Story has been. And Jose Reyes' tenure with the Rockies pretty much over. I don't think they'll ever even think about having him start another game for them. Even in a few years from now, if they needed somebody in that position, he just completely soured that relationship. Outfield, Dexter Fowler, Steve, leading Bryce Harper, last year's MVP, by 160,000 votes. Incredible. 1.611 million votes for the Chicago Cubs outfielder. Bryce Harper, Yoenis Cespedes, Jason Hayward, who's barely played this year because of injury. He hasn't really been all that special, in my opinion, has almost a million votes so far. And you have Jorge Soler. Again, this is where the scandal is. Jorge Soler, 678,000 votes. He's been awful this year. Above perennial MVP candidate Andrew McCutchen, Soler with almost 700,000 votes, and Andrew McCutchen, 557. Steve, do you believe that we need a change in the All-Star game voting procedures?
Well, the first thing I could say is the Cubs fans are very passionate about voting.
Yep.
And about their team, and especially seeing their team win right now, you know, gives them, you know, a little uplifting feeling. But there definitely has to be some kind of change in the All-Star voting. I know it's a popularity contest, but as we talked about before, the game means something. It means who gets home field advantage in the
yep.
World Series, and that's a big deal. It's a big
mm-hmm.
thing. So, you know,
but the voting
the managers know it.
Yep.
Yeah, the voting, I agree. The voting is a joke. You know, How are you going to be able to stop people from voting multiple times? That I don't know. Do you go back to the non-internet and just do paper voting for people who show up at the field, like they did in the past? To be honest with you, I don't know the best way to do it, except it doesn't become a fans vote anymore. Maybe they do a percentage of the fans vote along with a percentage of the player vote and a percentage of the manager vote, and see, who gets the most percentage points in doing that. And maybe that's a little fairer way to do it. I'm not sure, but there definitely needs to be some type of change to get the players who are having all-star years. It's called the all-star game every year, all-star. Mm-hmm. You're having a great year and not just getting voted in for, your name or the town you play in or, the fans who like you. It's mm-hmm. not fair to everybody else who has, incentives in their contract to make the all-star game, and they're having the career year of their life and they never make it there. That's just my opinion. I definitely think they need to make a change with the voting process and how these guys are picked to go and play in a game that's the Midsummer Classic that means something for later in the year.
Mm-hmm. Now, just one more, because the Soler one, and I've had in my fantasy team multiple times this year, has been very disappointing. I thought he would be one of the breakout stars last year. I spoke about him a lot. This year, hitting .223. Only 130 at-bats, had some injuries, but also hasn't played well. Batting, again, .223, 5 homers, has 29 hits on the season. Now let's look at Starling Marte, who's, ninth in the All-Star voting on the National League side, hitting .330, injuries throughout the season as well. Not enough to keep him off the field for a long period of time, but he has 19 stolen bases, which is almost as many hits as Jorge Soler has. It's a difference of 10. Jorge Soler has 29 hits. Starling Marte has 80 hits. Actually, Marte has more runs than Soler has hit. So it's ridiculous to the degree, especially when the game means something, like you said. McCutcheon, as much as I love him, has had a very poor first half, hitting an uncharacteristic .243. Only one stolen base there. Starling Marte, the standout there. Gregory Polanco also having a great season, trying to break out for them. Big-time prospect, only 24 years of age. And so again, there's something has to be done about it. It's not going to be done this year, but we have to see something. The game means something, and there's tie-ins. It is a business after all. There's so many tie-ins to contracts and things like that. And what a guy can say in future contract negotiations, hey, I've been a 5-time All-Star. It's only my 6th season. I think I deserve a little bit of a contract boost, or during arbitration hearings and things like that. So, here, somebody going out voting 150 times because, they took the day off work to do that. So that's the National League side. I'm sure we'll see some craziness on the American League side as well, but I did want to touch on that. More excited about what might be the night before, just because we don't know how the MLB All-Star game is going to shape up yet. Madison Bumgarner started a little bit of a conversation here by saying he wants to compete in the Home Run Derby. Now other pitchers are saying the same thing. We've seen some really good hitting pitchers over time, guys that love to just drill the ball, Dontrell Willis, Levan Hernandez. And of course, you mentioned the big three from the Braves from back in the day. Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz enjoyed hitting. Chicks dig the long ball. Remember those commercials? Great. Steve, as a former pitcher, and now as a... Not going to happen because of potential injury? Not going to happen because it's just...
That's correct. Absolutely. Okay. That's just my opinion. I knew you were going there.
It's
not going to happen. It's not going to go there. These teams are not going to allow their number ones and number two starters to go there and swing the bat as hard as they can to try to hit these balls out of the ballpark and risk an oblique injury or something that's going to keep them out of extended period of time when they're in the race for winning the division and having an opportunity to win a World Series. I would have a hard time thinking that teams would allow Major League Baseball to let pitchers go into the All-Star, especially American League pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get an American League pitcher that wants to hit who hasn't hit, who doesn't take swings. So is it just going to be a National League pitcher home run hitting contest?
Fair enough.
I just don't see it. I just don't see it coming to fruition. And these guys, they can start the conversation all they want, and maybe they tell these guys, okay, if you go into the home run hitting contest and you get injured, then your contract is null and void, and we would see how that goes. I don't think they would do
it. Nobody will do that. You got to be crazy.
So I mean, I just don't think. Yeah, I just don't think that it's worth it for the team to let these guys do it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of pitchers who enjoy hitting, Jake Arrieta, one of those guys in the conversation, hitting .267 this year, and has 5 RBIs and a home run this year, and 4 walks, by the way, which is the most walks he's ever had as an offensive player. Only 30 at-bats on the season, small sample set, but this is the conversation here. At the very least, we're seeing pitchers that are interested in hitting again, not just being an out. We're seeing Bartolo Colon get some hits, which is really funny. No matter what he does, people love to watch him. It's kind of one of those, I don't want to use the word train wreck, but it's one of those situations where you don't expect the guy to do anything, and he goes out and has one of the best seasons of his, one of the best first halves of his career again this year, both offensively and as a pitcher as well. So he's been doing great things for the New York Mets. Jake Arrieta, again, one of those pitchers, and Madison Bumgarner, of course, leading the pack with, you know, how much he enjoys hitting, which, again, is good to not be that surefire out. League leaders real quick so we can wrap up. Daniel Murphy, 361 in the league, all baseball. We have Xander Bogaerts and David Ortiz, 2 and 3, respectively, in all of baseball, but leading the pack in the American League. Which is really impressive. Xander Bogaerts, a guy that so many people gave up on a couple years ago and really broke out last year and doing it again this year. Nolan Arenado, Mark Trumbo, aforementioned, 20 home runs on the season now. Probably going to see either or both of those guys in the home run derby. We might also see Adam Duvall, who has 19 homers now for Cincinnati. Cincinnati's 2 best offensive players this year by power. You have Jay Bruce, who a lot of people gave up on. I believe he has 17 home runs now in the season. Big trade chip. Now he has 15 home runs on the season now, hitting .272, which is uncharacteristic of him because he's usually a .240, .250 hitter, especially the last couple seasons. But good story there for Cincinnati Reds. They have a couple trade chips there in their rebuilding process. RBI leaders, Edwin Encarnacion now at 61. David Ortiz a close second with 59. Then you have Nolan Arenado, of course, not a lot of guys to drive in. But when he does have somebody on some ducks on the pond, he drives in. RBIs there. Jay Bruce, 5th at 51 RBIs on the season. Stolen bases, Villar of the Milwaukee Brewers, who might also end up getting dealt. I'm hearing a lot about Ryan Braun. Steve, we'll talk about that in a later show, because we might see Ryan Braun depart from Milwaukee, not because he's not playing well. He is having a really good season, despite some injuries that he's had this year. But there's no reason for them to keep him when he can go somewhere else and fetch probably 3 or 4 big-time prospects in the process, because he's showing that post-steroids he can still hit and still play, which is very, very important. So that's on the offensive side. Pitching leaders, 1.58 ERA. Clayton Kershaw, we talked about him before, having a great season again. Jake Arrieta, 1.74. John Lester, 1.89. And then Noah Syndergaard, Thor, leading the pack for the Mets, 1.91. Tied with Madison Bumgarner, having another unbelievable season there. Again, Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija, just an impressive 1-2-3 there. Jeff Samardzija, can't believe how well he's pitched so far. Scenery and change of ballpark and being around those guys helped them out a lot. Having a great season, see what the second half brings. Win leaders mentioned before, Jake Arrieta, Chris Sale at 11 apiece. That might be the MLB All-Star game starting too. Certainly on the AL side, we're going to see Chris Sale. Unless something happens, I don't see any way that Chris Sale is not the starter for the first 2 or 3 innings. Strikeout wise, Clayton Kershaw, 133. Now, three guys tied at number 2, Steve, at 118 RBIs apiece. They would have to have a great 15 RBI game, just a 15 strikeout game, just to tie Clayton Kershaw's lead. And again, Kershaw's going to be starting again, I think a day or two, so maybe a couple days. But so he's just way ahead of the pack there. Saves wise, you have Yuri's Familia of the New York Mets at 22 saves, Zach Britton and AJ Ramos at 20 apiece there, and a great story there. Colome of the Tampa Bay Rays, who was just filling in for Brad Boxberger, who came off the DL and then went back on the DL. I think the next day, he was just filling in for him, having a great season there. sub-1 ERA there, Brad Boxberger might not have his job back, or you might have a trade chip there with either Boxberger or Alex Colome getting traded. Colome only 27 years of age, 19 saves for a team that only has 31 wins on the season. So very impressive there. That wraps up this week's show. Let's get to our last licks. Steve, would you like to start off for us?
I'll start it off. I could have went in so many different directions this week, but I'm actually going to go. I'm actually going to have a multi-last lick, kind of. I'm going to say congratulations to the Pittsburgh Penguins on winning the NHL Stanley Cup. What a great run that they had. Sidney Crosby being Sidney Crosby, you know, and then just the rest of their, you know, guys, you know, doing what they need to do. What a tremendous job by them. So that was my first one. My second one's going to be the NBA Finals and how it's turned out. It has been nothing but tremendous. We actually have been able to catch a few games, and not in person, but only on TV, and see how this has developed. You know, you had Golden State coming back from 3-1 against Oklahoma City. Now you have the Cleveland Cavaliers down 3-1. You know, going out to Golden State, winning Game 5, coming back home, winning Game 7. LeBron, you know, having back-to-back 40-point games, which doesn't happen very often. I think it's only the fifth time it has happened in NBA history, finals history. I just think Game 7 is going to be one for the ages. I actually think that it's going to be one of these games that's going to be, you know, and there hasn't been many this postseason in the NBA where the series have been close within 5 points coming down the end. But I really do think that it's going to be a tight game. I think LeBron's going to come to play, and it's going to come down to the wire. And I'm going to be curious to see if Cleveland wins their first championship in such a long time, or if Golden State is able to repeat after that tremendous season that they've had. So my last lick is just enjoy the game, have fun watching Game 7 of the NBA Finals, and you know, we'll discuss it next week when we have our next show.
Yep, absolutely. And actually, I want to stay on that as well, since you mentioned I could have the same idea. I could have gone a lot of different directions. So many stories to discuss. I was going to talk about the All-Star game, but I've actually really enjoyed. I think the NBA Finals. I think Game 7 is not only going to be the most watched game in NBA history, it's going to be the excitement level and the fervor is going to be on par with the Super Bowl type of feel, just because the emotion, the raw emotion of the series. You have the storyline of the best single season team in NBA history and the Golden State Warriors potentially collapsing in the finals after doing the same exact thing to the Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Championship. LeBron James bringing a title to Cleveland. It would be the first time there was a title in Cleveland, what, 53 years, Steve? Just an amazing story. The town is craving it. They want it. The electricity in Game 6 was unbelievable. I actually thought the Warriors had a really good chance, even though they were down big in the first couple quarters. I texted my buddy. I said, Warriors are going to win tonight, just because you saw a little determination in their face. And that's sometimes all you need. And sometimes guys get cocky on the other side when they have a big lead. And we see how that happens. It happened in Game 7 with the Thunder and the Warriors too. But the Warriors became completely childish, in my opinion, in the second half of that game. Klay Thompson had a great third quarter, finally picking it up. Then they just started chucking up stupid shots after stupid shots, not playing defense. Steph Curry getting fouled out for the first time in all season. We all know how much I love to yell out Del Curry when I play pickup games and scrimmage games in basketball. Everyone loves Steph Curry, and that can shoot 30 feet away. Some really impressive shots, and had a lot of bad shots as well. Horrible defense. I think he hurt his team a lot, turning the ball over when he shouldn't be. And this is not the way that the Warriors won 73 games. You don't win it the way they played. You got to get it together. I think we're going to see the best from both sides. I think it's going to be a close game. But what do you think, Steve? Who do you give the edge to right now, given everything, all the emotion, all the everything that's on the line?
It's been a very physical series. You know, the Cavaliers are playing tremendous right now. You know, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, you know, not much, so much love, but those two guys have been tremendous. I mean, as good as those guys have been, the slightest edge, only because they're playing at home to the Golden State Warriors. That's the only reason I am giving the edge to the Warriors, is because they're playing in their own building. So, you know, I'm curious to see how this is going to play out.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game for sure, no matter what. We have that tomorrow night. If you're a wrestling fan, there's also a pay-per-view tomorrow night, so it's a big night for sports. Hockey season is over. Basketball has one more game to go. It couldn't get any better than being a game seven with these two teams, the best two teams in basketball, in my opinion. More evenly matched than I would have thought they would be, but it's going to be a great game. Hope you get to watch it. Hope you get to enjoy it. Hopefully it's not a blowout, unless, you know, you're really craving something like that so you can, you know, turn the TV off early and not have to watch to the end. But it's going to be a great game for sure. We're going to see a lot of emotion pouring out after the end of the game, no matter who wins. Probably more emotion coming out of Cleveland because of everything it means to them, to that city, to LeBron himself, and his legacy, of course. So we'll end the show this week about that, talking that. And again, Tim Lincecum having his first start for the Angels today. A lot of great stories in baseball. Major League Baseball All-Star voting. Get out there and vote. Try to counter the swarm and the tsunami of Cubs voters if you're not a Cubs fan or you don't want to, you want to see the game be a little more on par with the people observing it. But that is those are our last licks. That's our end of the show. Stay tuned to CarsayandTheKid.com for details on the show, and thank you so much for listening.
Thanks again. Talk to you next
week. Thanks, all.
Have a great day.